everybody. Welcome to the last episode of 2021 for Chaps Lodge. We hope everyone's having a great holiday season, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Chaps Lodge.
Hey, guys. Welcome back.
Emily's feeling better tonight, so we're going to try to record some crazy stuff that happened in 2021 and the good stuff that happened in So when I say crazy, I guess we mean the bad things and the good things. The good thing is, the great thing is that there was a lot more good in 2021 than bad. So
yeah, so get ready for a year in review 2021, and we hope y'all are all having a good holiday season and ready for the start of 2022. So Trapper, let's start with the bad.
First of all, our president, no, I'm not going to go political. We had some extremely bad weather in January and February last winter. We normally don't get snow in the hill country in Texas. We normally get some ice. It's pretty common to get some ice storms, but they don't last very long. And we had a couple of snows in January when we were hunting that just kind of made things sloppy. Luckily, our feed programs were, you know, on track, and we've been feeding already quite a bit before what everybody in Texas calls a snowpocalypse. And for people up north, it's probably a normal week, but for us in Texas, we're not prepared for that kind of weather. Our water lines aren't buried that deep. Our animals aren't used to that kind of cold, and it was below freezing for 6 or 7 days. And the bad thing was that it had iced. We had a pretty good ice come through and kind of coated everything with ice, and then like 6 to 8 inches of snow around us, and then it iced again and then snowed again, and it just, the power lines got heavy and power poles broke and people lost power for almost a month, and we lost power and electricity and water. But I had to go out to my dad's every day and then also to a ranch out in Harper that we hunt, a reservation ranch, and break water and milk water troughs so the animals could drink and feed literally all I could carry. Sorry, Scruffy's scratching in the background. Anyway, so that was tough because I'd leave the house and I think the fastest I ever could drive was about 40 mile an hour in full drive all the way to the hay barn to my dad's and then on out to Harper. And what would normally take me, oh, a 3 or 4 hour trip, literally would take me all day. I'd leave at daylight and I'd get back to a Stonewall location, which we were all kind of camped out there at the time. And Emily was there keeping the fire going in the fireplace and trying to work from home.
Yeah, it was miserable. I had no purpose other than boiling snow and keeping the fire going. Right. I felt useless.
But a lot of people don't realize is that when it's that cold that animals need to drink more than they do when it's hot. I mean, they literally are burning so much energy, and that cold is taking all the humidity and water out of their body, out of their system. And there's a lot of animals that were lost, mostly exotics. Black buck got hit pretty hard. Axis got hit fairly hard. I heard some people lost some wildebeest and zebras and stuff like that, but it was tough. It was a really tough time and made you realize what you need to prepare for every year. We haven't had a winter like that in a long time. Not since I was a kid that I can remember having that much snow.
Yeah, and you were lucky. I mean, you know, there wasn't a lot for some of the older ranchers and stuff that couldn't get to their ranch or couldn't get out and do what you did. I mean, they lost a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people even lost cattle just because their cattle couldn't water.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that. It's just people couldn't get there. They just physically couldn't drive there. Either the roads were too bad or too icy or too snowy. It was pretty dangerous. I slipped and slid around there and saw a lot of people fly off into bar ditch and stuff. So
yeah.
Anyway, that was a really low time.
Yeah, so sticking on the same course of weather, you had some other interesting run-in with the weather.
Yeah, when we were in Alaska this fall, man, being stuck in that tent for, it was a little over 30 hours with Josh and Zane and Cade, just that wind and rain, and every time you think it's going to start kind of maybe letting up, it just come back and just beat, and started kind of rattling our tent stakes out of the ground, and we had to get the six-wheelers and tie the tent to the six-wheeler so it wouldn't blow away. If we wouldn't have been in the tent, it would have blown away for sure. And then it ripped, and it was starting to come apart, and it's a really good tent. So.
And how high did you say the winds were, you felt like?
We didn't have a meter of any kind, but at least 40-mile-an-hour gust, which is not, like, crazy. I mean,
but for that long of a time period,
it was like sustained 25 to 30 mile an hour winds, and then gusts up to probably 40. I mean, I've been in some Wyoming wind that's like 60 mile an hour gust, and that's like almost blows you away. So yeah, that weather there was pretty bad. And then one morning I was making coffee or something for everybody, and I had sun shining on my face and it was snowing on my back. It was kind of a weird moment.
I think if we've all learned anything from prior podcasts and everything, is that the weather in Alaska is completely unpredictable and can either be great or miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be the most beautiful day you've ever seen. It could be the nastiest day you've ever seen. It could happen all within the same 24 hours. So. Moving on from that.
Yeah. So you had another bad thing or low of the year that scared you.
Oh, yeah, well, it scared me because Kate and I were doing putting some stuff away in the barn, and we don't have lights in there yet. And I walked by and walked down the alleyway and had my little phone light, turned it on when I kind of got in there. And Kate walked to me and then turned around and walked back. And I had this eerie feeling. I had a feeling there was a snake. I could just feel it. And I had this real eerie feeling. And I got my phone light out, and I'm looking all on the ground, and I come back down the alley, and there's this little snake, 3-foot rattlesnake curled up. He never rattled. He never really moved. And it wasn't cold. It was probably, it was back in the early fall, October, I guess. And, man, I jumped back and screamed like a girl. And
yeah, because how close were you to him?
Well, I was like literally like a footstep away because, you know, that phone light's not very bright. But Cade's footprint in the dirt was literally like within 2 inches of stepping on him.
Yeah, because y'all had walked back and forth several times.
I walked by him once, and Cade walked by him twice. Ugh. And that's what was the scary thing, just to think about how we didn't get bit and have a trip to the hospital. Man, I don't like rattlesnakes.
I don't think anybody does.
We used to catch them and use, you know, snake catchers and stuff like that. And I've had a few friends over the years get bit and, you know, almost lose their arm or something stupid. So I don't even want to mess with them.
I don't like any snake. Remember we were walking in the gate in our backyard sometime this year, and there was a little it was like the size of a pencil. It was so small.
Little garden snake. Yeah, I won't hurt nothing.
And you didn't kill it, and it made me so mad. And then you saw that rattlesnake a couple days later, didn't you?
Yeah.
You're like, I should have killed the snake for Emily.
No, it's just a little garden snake. He just wants to eat some bugs.
Any snake is just not, ew. I don't mind spiders or scorpions or bugs, but snakes just are my...
I don't meet a lot of people that are just in love with snakes. Well, to the next subject.
Yeah, so kind of the last really bad highlight, which is a kind of an oxymoron there, but which is good, it's the last one, was a fallow story you have, right? Mm-hmm.
So tell us about that. Back in, it was like October, I guess. Late October? Yeah. Late October, I had a couple of fallow hunters, Sam and Sam, Sam Wild, Sam Henry. And Sam Wild wanted a big chocolate, and his buddy he had already shot a nice elk bull with us. And we were out at Mountain Home at Mark Ivy's place, and I'd only seen this happen maybe two other times in all my hunting adventures. And Mark said he's seen it a few times in his life. And, so we found this really big spotted buck, and there was another one that looked pretty similar to him, but not like, I want to say they're almost identical. Anyway, so this buck, he's walking kind of down the fence, and we're not but 150 yards away or so, and the buck's walking pretty slow, and I'm looking through the binos trying to see what's going to happen, And Sam Henry shoots, and that buck's like almost like his butt like drops, and he just takes off running. And I thought, man, did he shoot him in the hindquarter or something? I'm like, well, if he caught any, you know, if he got any blood on him, the dogs will find him. Well, I sent the dogs out, and we walked to where that shot was, and I thought it was for sure it was a hit, and we didn't find a speck of blood. There wasn't any hair, like nothing. Dogs worked. We walked all the way up to the top of the hill and all around everywhere. And I called Mark and I told him what had happened. And he got in his buggy and he drove. And he said he thought he found a buck that he said that he saw a spot on. And he said it's in that no man's land is what we call it. And that's like kind of straight up the leg, above the lungs, but below the spine, and you actually don't catch any bone of the shoulder. So there's like a little tiny triangle there that if the bullet passes through without, usually if, you know, like a half inch higher, it would have broken the spine. Mm-hmm. If it had been an inch or two lower, it would have got the top of the lungs. So it just kind of goes into this nowhere. But the deer shows back up, shoot, mid-November, month and a half, you know, early December. Yeah, a month and a half later, probably, Mark calls me and says, hey, I found your buck. I was like, what buck? He said, that fallow buck that you weren't real sure if y'all hit or not. I was like, man, okay. And he was still alive, but he was like, had lost a lot of weight and had maggots in that wound. And was coming, had calmed back down, and was coming back to feed, and that's when Mark, I told Mark just to go ahead and put him down. I didn't want him suffering anymore. But in that scenario, Sam Henry paid for the deer because wounded and lost is the same as dead and found. And if we'd have found the deer without a scratch on him, we'd have refunded his money. But he ended up killing a spotted buck the next day that we thought was that deer. And after we got both the antlers, both the skulls side by side, they are literally almost identical.
Oh, wow.
So that was an experience for me on the guide end and in the hunting end that was like, I think I knew what I heard and saw when I saw the deer tuck his butt and run, but to like not recover it and never find any blood was altogether kind of not new to me. I've had it happen once or twice, but it's been a long time.
I was gonna ask if that had ever happened to you.
But so. It's been a long time, and it was like, oh yeah, I remember how this goes now. this is not gonna go well. So that was a really kind of a low feeling to not exactly know what happened, because everything kind of happened so fast. Like, we were moving in the Jeep, deer was walking, I was like, okay, there he is, there's your shot, and then deer runs off and no trace of him. And then, Sam got a good chocolate. Sam Wild got a big chocolate on that hunt that he wanted. And we've had some great trophies this year, all year, from January 1 all through now. I mean, just so we can move into like the high highs now, right?
Yeah. So now the good stuff, which honestly, your bad stuff's not too horrible. So
could have been worse.
Yeah.
Other than weather, I guess. Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. The snowpocalypse was pretty bad. Other than that.
So highlights for 2021.
Yes.
Well, I got married to you and we went on a West Texas honeymoon.
We did.
That was in April and that was really fun.
Yeah.
And we talked about some of those places on our earlier podcast to visit, Alpine, Marfa, Marathon, Fort Davis.
Yep.
All those little dive towns are pretty cool.
I still love Fort Davis. That was my favorite.
Yeah. Fort Davis is the highest town in Texas as far as elevation wise. So that's a fun fact.
Yeah.
And then
I just love the landscape out there. You know, it's so different from someone that grew up in the hill country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, I remember the first time I saw it years ago when I went camping out there. It's just to see it for the first time, you're like, this is Texas, you know, and the mountains.
I think
that's
what a lot of people think Texas. Well, I think a lot of people think Texas is flat and we all still ride our horses to work.
Yeah. But some people do.
So Some people have to. But from like East Texas to West Texas, Texas is so diverse. Yeah. You go from the swamps and the piney trees to the hill country and then to way out there. And those are actual mountains. Like yes, the Davis Mountains are, they're big.
That was beautiful.
And it's beautiful. It's, you know, it's a desert climate and call it the Trans-Pecos area. And it's a very beautiful area to visit, to hunt, to explore. Big Bend National Park's there. You go visit that with the family and friends. And Texas has a lot to offer in that aspect of things.
Definitely.
So, and then this summer, Lucky Dog had a 7 puppies.
Yes.
That's our Yegg Terrier female.
And that Scruffy, was the highlight of my year.
Scruffy was the dad. We didn't think she'd have that many. That was her first litter.
That was my first time ever tending and caring to pups from like that young of an age. My parents used to, like, our puppies or our dogs would have puppies, you know, but I was little and I never had to actually like see it all and do it and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and I remember your dad came over and was
declawing
and
docking the tails,
and I got to help. I say I got to, I had to help. You weren't here, and that was an experience. Mm-hmm. But they were so cute.
Yeah. And I was surprised on how good of a mom Lucky was for her first litter. She took really good care of them, raised some really good dogs. From what I've heard, some of them are pretty gritty and crazy. So hopefully they turn into good dogs.
Yeah. Well, I know when just having them out back here in the yard, you know, watching them, there was some of them that already had their nose to the ground, just real alert, mm-hmm. paying attention, ready to go. So I think they'll do good.
And then a highlight for me this year, too, is I went fishing with a friend of mine in Port Aransas and on the Texas coast. And I've done a few offshore trips for snapper and stuff like that. And I've done the bay fishing with, you know, wade fishing and catching trout and redfish. But I'd never really fished the rigs. I guess that's kind of mm-hmm. what we did. And we did a little bit of bay fishing, catching redfish and trout, too, but a new experience for me was catching kingfish.
Oh, yeah.
Which are, what, king mackerel?
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a funny thing. And then Deling, too. So, Port O'Connor. Sorry.
I'm like, Port Aransas? When did you go there without me?
Port O'Connor. Well, it's all the same down there. All looks the same to me. Anyway.
Port O'Connor's a bit smaller.
But it was fun. So the ling, you like throw the, you cast down beside these rigs and you start reeling up and they all kind of like rise up with the bait or the lures and you can kind of see them.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden like one will hit and they're like, okay, don't reel him in. Like you might catch another one. Well, if we'd all like known up ahead of time that what our plan was, we might have hooked on to 2 or 3, but we just caught one out of that first group. JJ, I think, caught it. And there was a big one in there that captain, of course, the big one always gets away, right? But there was apparently a real big one in there. And then we were kind of drifting around those rigs and we got in these whitefish and man, like they'd hit your line and just start running.
When you say whitefish, you're talking about kingfish?
Kingfish, yeah. The kingfish, they'd hit your bait and just, man, they'd just take off. Like
kingfish are fun to catch.
They're fun to catch.
They are so, I don't know if anyone out there likes to eat kingfish. I'm sure there are some people, but I don't like kingfish. I've never met anyone that really does.
I don't know if it's that good at eating, but it was really fun to catch.
But they're fun to catch, yep. Yeah.
So, yeah, one time we had a couple of them hooked up, and they almost had one in, and my line took off. And I'm just sitting there watching my reel, and the captain was like, it'll be all right. I'm like, he's like, looks over his shoulder and he sees my reel and I'm almost out of line. And he's like, oh no. And he throws the boat in reverse and we finally get that one. And they're not huge by any means, but they're a fun size. They don't like wear you out. Like, I guess you caught marlin before and that's pretty tiresome.
Oh yeah.
I mean, these, we were tired at the end of the day, but were they probably like a 8 or 10 pound fish maybe? Maybe more.
Yeah, maybe a little more.
Yeah.
They're fun. I know when we take people offshore, you know, you can always go like marlin fishing or go for like sailfish, whitefish, et cetera, Dorado, Wahoo, all that stuff. But like if people are just like, I just want to have a good time and catch something, like they want to catch something, they don't want to go for the bigger stuff, If it's snapper season, that's always a given. Right. And then just like right out there around the rigs, the kingfish and people that just want to go to catch stuff will have more fun.
Fishing a lot more when we're catching.
See, I'm the opposite. I'll go wait out there all day for a blue marlin.
I don't want to wait out there all day for a blue marlin that I have to fight it for 4 or 5 hours. It seems I'm not that mad at a fish.
Oh, it's so fun.
Big fish. I'm more of a river fisherman. I like to fly fish.
Yeah, I still need to learn how to do that.
And then kind of coming into the fall, we've had a great Alaska trip, great Wyoming trip. We were very fortunate that everybody got trophies in Alaska, and even despite the weather and hardships and fog and getting everything in and out. And a big highlight for me was Eric Smoos and watching him do that and fighting through that pain that he was in with his hip. And then, you know, Josh being a trooper and getting his caribou there at the end, and then those other guys coming in and getting their caribou was fun. I was talking to Eric the other day. I was like, man, I'm really glad, because we actually got our fish back from Alaska. We had some of it smoked, so it just made it back. Didn't mean to cut you off, but I was talking to him and his wife. I said, man, looking back, I'm really glad we added that little bit of fishing on the front end of that. One, to kind of get you not really over the jet, I'm kind of over the jet lag because it's a little bit of time difference, and then just kind of relax for a minute and get your feet underneath you, you know?
So you're not just landing and going straight off to the
right
tundra. That would have
been... Sleep on a cot for 14 days.
Yeah. And for those of you that haven't heard, in the prior episodes, we've got Josh on and Kate on, and they both talk about Alaska, and then you talk about prepping for it in the very beginning of the season. So if you aren't familiar with that, you should go back and listen. There's some pretty good stories.
Yeah, so definitely some adventures to listen to. But we actually fish for silvers and then reds, red salmon. And it was the fishing for the reds was, they call it flossing, which to me I call that snagging. But whatever, if you want to put some finesse on it. But that's basically what it's a different type of fishing, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah, and so you said you had some success in Wyoming, too. Wyoming. And I know that there's a particular thing you're really excited and proud of that you did because of your vengeance for coyotes.
Yes, so Wyoming was a success, great success there with the elk and mule deer and antelope all the way around. But I forgot, I left the part out when Russell was on and we were talking about our hunt. I was telling him we were going up this one road. I said, man, every year... Eventually, I mean, we go up the same road a lot, you know, every other day or every day or so. I said, man, usually every year I kill a coyote on this road. And no sooner I said that, and I turned the corner, and these coyotes were like deer in the headlights. They saw us, we saw them.
How many?
Two.
Okay.
And but they like, I could just see their heads, and they were kind of coming over the hill, down the road towards us. Of course, I start grabbing for a rifle, and coyotes take off running, and they went down this ravine. So I get around the corner and I'm waiting for them to come back up, and one comes back up and he's running at an angle, and all of a sudden he just kind of goes like dead straight, like from my left to my right. So I step out away from the truck, but I just kind of lean on the hood a little bit and I just swing with him, and I let off his nose. I can't exactly know how in my mind, you know, how much I let him, but I let him off his nose probably, I don't know, 8 or 10 inches. I was shooting my 28 Nosler, which is super fast, and bam, hit him and just rolled him.
On how far away was he?
About 250 yards.
Okay.
We ranged it afterwards. I didn't have time to range it before. I just did a lot of guesswork real quick in my head.
Yeah.
And flung one out there, and a little bit of luck in that. I didn't get the second one because by the time I'd reloaded, he had gone up the hill and out of sight. But then Scruffy went over there and tore that one up a little bit for me.
Well, I know how you hate coyotes. I've been in a truck with you one time when you saw one, and you aren't joking when you say that you will wreck a truck trying to go get a coyote.
If it's a coyote or a Kolbuck, I will almost wreck a truck.
And oh, scare people. It was scary. Riding. I think I'd only like known you for 2 months. I was like, oh, he's not kidding about his...
Yeah, hate a coyote.
Ugh.
Love killing them.
Well, that's exciting. That's cool. So you've gotten one every year when you've gone up there?
Yeah, usually I get more than one up there. Usually like three to five. Hmm. But if I would have stayed when that little bit of weather hit that was coming, the colder weather, we probably would have gotten some more coyotes. But John shoots a lot of them on his place every year, so they get taught a lot of lessons there. They're seen within, I think within 500 yards, John's going to probably kill him. He's pretty excellent shot. Wow. So.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. But we've been very blessed this year. We've had lots of things to be thankful for, our clients and our friends that have come hunting with us. And, you know, we don't talk about Texas hunting that much, but we've had some really great Texas hunts. We've had some really great trophies taken, and whitetail and fallow and all of the above, and some great people that have visited and brought their kids and their families. And we're just kind of wrapping up our season now. We've got a few more weeks of it, and then we're on to different stuff. But it's been a great year. I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful for you and to be alive and live and do what I do, and I'm blessed.
Yeah, it has been. I think it's cool how many repeat clients you have, and just how y'all kind of stay in touch during the year and kind of pick up right where you left off, you know. Mm-hmm. People that I saw last season when I first met you and we first started dating, that I'm seeing again now or hearing about. It's just cool, you know, to put faces to names and remember their hunt last year and stuff. So,
I mean, I just pride myself in treating people right and teaching them and sharing my life and stories with them, and just,
yeah,
you know, hunting. Oh, the biggest highlight of my Axis hunting stuff was, y'all heard the story about the big buck. The boys ended up naming him Blades because he was real bladed out. But back in May, we had one of Cade's hunters miss him. Cade and I talked about this. And then I had a guy also miss him. And then a couple months later, finally got a client on him and got him down. And that buck, from when Cade's guy missed him, nobody had seen him until my guy had missed him, which was like 4 or 5 months.
Oh, wow.
So he was pretty smart and elusive. And then he was just a hard, really hard buck to hunt. And it was a big feat for all of us as guides. And he was a pretty awesome buck. He was just one of those all-around great deer. I love Axis is one of my favorite trophies, and so that one in particular was pretty amazing.
Awesome. Well, definitely more highs than lows this year, which is always a good thing. Fortunate.
Yes, definitely.
So
I think we're about wrapped up.
Yeah. So you guys, I hope y'all have a great into your 2021 and go into 2022 and try something new or explore a new place or book a hunt you've always been wanting to take.
Yeah, guys, just get out there and do anything you can to get outside. Just, you know, go look for sheds this spring after the season's over. I'm going on a goose hunt that I hadn't been on in a while. I haven't been on a goose hunt in a long time, going with a friend of mine. I hadn't been fishing like that off the Gulf in a while. You know, those are things that aren't my everyday or all the time hunts, and I really enjoy trying different stuff or reliving something that I hadn't done in 5 or 10 years, you know?
We're gonna go offshore more in 2022.
Say what?
Mark my words.
I'll be at the dock.
No, I'm getting you out there.
All right.
All right, everybody. We'll see you in 2022.
See you next year.